It's Wednesday, January 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President-elect Trump tweets a warning to North Korea. Turkey believes it has a photo of a wanted New Year's killer.
We know that many of the things that Trump has promised are not things that Republicans in Congress particularly want.
Will Donald Trump's Republican Congress be ready to approve his agenda? Also ahead, viral social media highlights of 2016. It's all on today's International Edition. President-elect Donald Trump has taken to his Twitter account again, this time responding to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's New Year's address, in which he said his regime is in the final stages for a test of an intercontinental ballistic missile. Mr. Trump, on whether such a missile should or could reach the United States, said it won't happen. A South Korean foreign ministry spokesman said Tuesday the comment shows Mr. Trump is clearly aware of the gravity and urgency of the North Korean nuclear threat. The president-elect also took aim at China, tweeting it has been taking out massive amounts of money and wealth from the U.S. in totally one-sided trade, but won't help with North Korea. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman said China's hard work to ensure denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula should be obvious to all. Sung-Yoon Lee, an assistant professor of Korean studies at Tufts University in Boston, tells VOA's Victor Beatty, given the trajectory of Pyongyang's nuclear and missile programs, it is likely close to delivering a nuclear warhead on a missile that can hit the mainland United States.
Rather than underestimating or patronizing North Korea, I would err on the side of caution and take Kim Jong-un's threat very seriously and really brace for an imminent, perhaps a very soon, such a missile test, a flight test of a ballistic missile. It could come even in January. January 8th is Kim Jong-un's birthday. Last year, we remember, he conducted his fourth nuclear test, the country's fourth nuclear test, just 2 days shy of his birthday on January 6th, and then followed up a month later with yet another long-range missile test. So that's a serious threat. And Mr. Trump probably took the right tone, but it's very unconvincing. I don't think the United States can really stop North Korea's machinations, North Korea's designs.
What kind of policy change is necessary?
We have at least a quarter century of documented failed policy, I would say, going back to the George Herbert Walker Bush administration, the Clinton administration, George W. Bush administration, and the outgoing Obama administration. All conventional approach to North Korea negotiations with a bit of sanctions here and there, that has not worked. North Korea has marched down the nuclear path, and we are a lot worse off today than we were, say, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly 25 years ago.
Cedric Layton, an international risk assessment consultant and former Air Force intelligence officer, was asked if the Trump tweet represents a potential shift in U.S. policy.
It's not really a shift in U.S. policy so much as a much more vigorous explanation of U.S. policy. U.S. policy has basically called for a denuclearized Korea, and the only way to enforce that, of course, now that North Korea does possess nuclear weapons, is to make it very clear that the North Koreans can't deploy those weapons on an intercontinental ballistic missile. So it's a reaffirmation of U.S. policy in a very direct way for the new president.
Where does North Korea line up on the national security risks that the U.S. faces in 2017?
Very near the top. I think the North Koreans are clearly one of the top three threats that the United States and its partners face in the world. And certainly it is the number one threat in Asia. And there's no better way to put it than to say that it is one of the top concerns that the U.S. has. And it is also one of the top things on the agenda for any incoming president.
Cedric Layton said such an ICBM test could come sometime this year. Time now for our social media segment, and of course it's with G. Abby Lee. She's right here in Studio 22 to tell us what's buzzing online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden is trending on the web with a Twitter Moments page describing the tweets as Biden doing Biden things. The vice president was at a swearing-in ceremony of newly elected senators for the last time in his tenure as VP.
Okay, I must ask, what are the so-called Biden things?
Jim, your guess is as good as mine. Kissing babies and making uncensored remarks. One of the most watched clips from the ceremony was one of Biden trying to kiss a baby from Senator Burr's family, who is a senator from North Carolina. C-SPAN is an American cable network, and it used hashtag BidenCam to tweet about the event.
Well, that must have been a pretty interesting sight. What else happens to be trending?
He wasn't very successful trying to kiss the baby. With the inauguration just a couple of weeks away, all eyes are on who will be in attendance, and that's what reporters are tweeting about. Back in late December, the only former U.S. president who committed to attending Donald Trump's inauguration was President Jimmy Carter. And now it looks like both Bill Clinton and his former rival, Hillary Clinton, will be at the inauguration, along with George W. Bush and his wife, Laura. Bush's father, former President George H.W. Bush, will not attend.
Okay. Well, lots of politics. Anything else besides that today?
The last item is also from the U.S., but about celebrity Kim Kardashian. She sent out her first tweet since suffering robbery in Paris last October. She's usually more prolific than that. Mm-hmm. She posted a photo of herself, husband Kanye West, and their two children, and captioned it, "Family." Many of her fans are tweeting, "The Queen is back." With that, that wraps up our social media segment.
All right. Thank you. Where our queen of social media is, of course, G. Abby Lee. You may follow her on Twitter, at G. Abby Lee. I'm out there as well, at VOA Stevenson. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia. Russia eyes naval drills with Philippines as two ships visit. Judges ruled Jakarta governor blasphemy trial closed to media. China confirms aircraft carrier participated in military drills in South China Sea. China begins to ease its 2,000-year-old monopoly on salt. Indian ministers under fire for blaming Western clothes for sex attacks. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website. And if you happen to have a smartphone, take the news with you using our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Turkish media have broadcast a video of a man they say is the suspected gunman who killed 39 people during a New Year's attack on an Istanbul nightclub. The video appears to be from a cell phone the man is carrying as he walks around Istanbul's Taksim Square. It's not clear when that video was recorded. Dorian Jones in Istanbul shared more about the investigation with International Edition's Sarah Williams.
Well, we're getting a lot of information from media, in fact, from state-run TV stations and pro-government media, but nothing formal from the state. And there's quite a lot of conflicting information. There's some reports saying that this is a 28-year-old from Kyrgyzstan. That came from the state broadcaster. Then there came information saying he was possibly from belonging to the Uyghur minority in China. But none of this has been confirmed. In fact, the identity was published of the gunman by, again, state media, but then that has since been retracted. So there's a lot of information going around, a lot of it's contradictory, but it does appear that this gunman did spend some time in the Turkish city of Konya. Now, that's a very conservative city. It's in the center of Turkey, and it is known as a base that's been used by Islamic State cells and jihadist groups for operations into Syria. And so there are no surprises there. There are reports that the wife of the gunman has been detained and questioned. But again, there's very little formal information coming out about this. We do understand there have been some more detentions. Two foreigners were detained at Istanbul Atatürk International Departure Lounge, but no more information about those. And there's been also a few other arrests. And it's believed mainly those that have been detained come from Central Asian countries of Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan.
What is the atmosphere like in Istanbul regarding this attack? And are people worried that there might be another one?
Well, indeed. I mean, I was out in the evening last night and everything was very quiet, even though it is a couple of days after New Year's Eve. It's even for that time of the year exceptional. All the bars are empty, the coffee shops are broadly empty too. People are staying at home. And I think there is a genuine concern that this gunman, who is widely accepted, is a professional. He knew how to use his gun. He discharged his gun 160 times in the space of 7 minutes, killing 39 people. He could well strike again. It's unclear whether he's still in Istanbul or he has left the city, but there is fear, and there is fear that another terror attack could occur. Istanbul's still recovering from last month's bombing blamed on Kurdish rebel group that targeted a football stadium where police were on duty. This country is increasingly concerned that security forces are failing to come to grips and prevent these terror attacks.
That's interesting in light of the, you know, the recent crackdown by the Turkish government following the coup. I mean, so many officials and journalists have been arrested.
Well, indeed, that is in some ways seen as part of the difficulties facing the security forces, because much of this crackdown and purge has been on the Turkish police and the wider security forces. Literally, thousands upon thousands of senior officers have been removed from the police, accused of being involved in the plot to overthrow the government. Similar wide-scale purges have gone on within the military, and experts say that this definitely will have an effect on the effectiveness of the security forces, in particular that much of the purges have affected the police's anti-terror units. And even though the government say that all these people have been replaced, analysts and experts say that it still will take time for those people to get up to speed, and this really puts them at a disadvantage. And at the same time, you have these twin threats. You have Kurdish rebel group, the PKK, targeting Turkey's main cities, mainly security forces, and you have Islamic State as well. Unprecedented levels of terror. At the same time, the security forces are struggling with these purges.
Dorian Jones reporting from Istanbul. Be sure to check with our website, voanews.com, for much more on this story. We're also on Twitter at @VOA_IE. President-elect Donald Trump heads into the crucial first 100 days of his presidency with a golden opportunity, a Republican-controlled Congress. VOA's Catherine Gibson reports from Capitol Hill that that advantage still may not be enough to pass ambitious Republican policy plans for health care, tax reform, and spending cuts.
A moment of unity following House Speaker Paul Ryan's meeting with the president-elect at Trump Tower in early December.
We're very excited about getting to work and hitting the ground running in 2017 to put this country back on track.
For the new president, success will be defined by several signature moves.
What Donald Trump is going to want is his big tax cut combined with his promise of a big increase in defense, combined with as much as he can do with an infrastructure plan, and be able to declare victory on sweeping things by the end of his first 100 days.
For the voters who put that unified government in Washington, success will mean congressional action on immigration, the economy, and cutbacks in government programs. Congress's first act before Trump is even sworn in? Repeal President Obama's health care plan. But with only a slim majority in the Senate, Republicans will be careful not to completely dismantle popular parts of Obamacare so they can maintain their political capital for other projects.
There will be enough Senate Democrats to ball the process up again if they choose to. To what end, though?
Trump's cabinet choices will face Senate confirmation hearings, where both parties are expected to have tough questions about the nominees, many of whom have no prior government experience. While on the House side, Democrats will fight Paul Ryan's long-held plans to cut key entitlement programs.
Democrats in Congress and millions of Americans across the country are going to make it very, very clear. Hands off Medicare.
A cut that could clash with Trump's promise to preserve these programs. While on trade, he could face strong opposition from his own party.
We know that many of the things that Trump has promised are not things that Republicans in Congress particularly want. And then the question becomes, how much will Trump, frustrated by Congress not doing what he wants, act on his own through executive action?
And the answer to that question could determine if Republicans stay unified well past the first 100 days of a Trump presidency. Catherine Gibson on Capitol Hill, VOA News.
Diabetes is a common and growing disease in many parts of the world. Research reveals negative feelings and the stigma of being overweight are jeopardizing the health of type 2 diabetics by affecting how they manage their condition, as we hear from VOA's Faith Lapidus.
Most diabetics must control their blood sugar with insulin injections, which lower the glucose level. But a new survey has found that the stigma of obesity, often associated with diabetes, means some are risking their long-term health to hide their illness.
So if they go out for a meal, they'll have to take their medication with them. And people feel embarrassed about using the medication in public. So they skip it and don't use it at all. And what that means is actually their blood glucose levels run typically too high. Now, in the short term, that doesn't cause really very many problems. But the issue is that in the long term, having very high blood glucose levels causes really, really significant problems for the body.
Problems like heart attack, stroke, blindness, and even amputations. Very low blood glucose levels can lead to hypoglycemia, with rapid heartbeat, blurry vision, fainting, and even death if it's not reversed. Howard Cox was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes 20 years ago at the age of 45 and has been injecting insulin for the last 10 years. He says sometimes too high is better than too low.
I don't put too much insulin into me before I play golf, because what you don't want on the 9th or 10th hole is for all of a sudden your brain to go a bit awry. So you leave it a little bit high deliberately so that you can play the round of golf.
While not all type 2 diabetics are obese, the majority are. And Pemberton says they can find the holiday season an especially sensitive time with mixed messages from the media.
They're kind of pushing kind of high calorie, unhealthy foods, and saying that it's somehow a treat and that we deserve it. And yet, on the other hand, we're bombarded by images of kind of people being very slim and this kind of, totally unobtainable idealized body image. So actually, people are really confused.
He adds, however, there's no confusing the risks of not controlling blood sugar. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And it's a very serious condition. If you'd like to see the video that goes with that story, check it out at our website, voanews.com. While you're online, follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Like us on Facebook. We're out there at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, by now, we all know the internet is a pretty wild and sometimes wacky place. What begins as a simple video of people standing perfectly still can explode in popularity on social media in just a matter of minutes. VOA's Arash Arabasadi takes a look back at some of what went viral in 2016.
Each year in the era of social media is another year in viral videos. Take, for instance, this year's Mannequin Challenge. It is basically people standing perfectly still. But a few American police departments joined the fun.
Oh, I'm such a happy Chewbacca!
Candace Payne bought herself a birthday present of a mask of Chewbacca from Star Wars. She laughed her way to a record-breaking 164 million Facebook views. Payne, known widely as Chewbacca Mom, appeared on several TV shows, and people started buying the mask. She raked in thousands of dollars of goodies from the manufacturer and the retailer. A university in Florida even offered both of her kids full scholarships.
DJ Khaled!
All I do is win, 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 no matter what!
DJ Khaled is a gold and platinum-selling musician. The U.S.-born son of two Palestinian parents describes himself as a devout Muslim. But that's not what landed him on the cover of Bloomberg Businessweek magazine in 2016. This was...
The key
is not to drive your jet ski in the dark.
What started as a video of Khaled getting lost in the water went viral. And so did this Snapchat video of his wife giving birth to their son. President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden are no strangers to viral video.
Mr. President, you ready to move?
Absolutely. Let's do this thing. Let's move.
Oval Office. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm there. It's so much more intimidating.
In a 2016 White House video, the president flipped cue cards while mega award-winning playwright and composer Lin-Manuel Miranda freestyle rapped about the government and Obama's last year in office.
How good is that? That's, you think that's going viral? That's going viral.
But rounding out 2016, it was Biden's turn to go viral. The so-called No Joe viral sensation was as much a goodbye to Obama and Biden as it was a look ahead to Trump and his vice president, Mike Pence. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Oh, we're just getting started in the new year. Can't wait to see what goes viral. If you want to see what went viral in Arash's report, just check it out on our website at voanews.com. We're also out there on Facebook at VOA Now. And, of course, Twitter. You got to follow our stream at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Jimmy Cook, a jack of all trades, and I'm here to attest a master of all of them, too. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a wonderful day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Throughout this holiday season, the United States government is profiling the cases of prisoners unjustly held around the world and the families they leave behind. The stories of these individuals, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power, highlight the broader struggle faced by so many families of political prisoners who have to commemorate countless family occasions with loved ones behind bars. One of those unjustly imprisoned is Ilham Toti, a member of the Muslim Uyghur ethnic group in China. Before his arrest, Ilham Toti was a distinguished professor of economics at Beijing's Minzu University. Toti was also a voice of reason on Uyghur issues, encouraging both the Chinese government and the Uyghur community to constructively engage in order to improve relations. Beginning in 2006, Toti ran a website to foster discussion about the economic, social, and developmental issues Uyghurs face. His site also improved cross-cultural understanding between ethnic groups by translating Chinese language news into Uyghur. In January 2014, Toti was arrested with seven of his students and accused by Chinese authorities of forming a criminal gang that sought to split Xinjiang from China. In September 2014, after a two-day trial, Toti was given a life sentence on charges of separatism. Toti's sentence is one of the harshest handed down to a rights activist in recent years and comes amid a sweeping crackdown on dissent under Chinese President Xi Jinping. Several of the students arrested with Toti were given lesser sentences after their televised public confessions. Toti was tried and imprisoned in Xinjiang, more than 2,000 kilometers from Beijing, where his family still lives, making it difficult and expensive for them to see him in brief bi-monthly visits. Mr. Toti and his family represent thousands of other prisoners unjustly detained around the world and their family members who also suffer as a result. The United States, said Ambassador Power, calls on all governments to release them. Political prisoners should be free to believe. They should be free to be loved. They should be free to be home.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.